It has been 60 years since the birth of America's interstate highway system. What kind of shape are they in today? And what's needed to make sure they can keep us rolling down them safely in the future? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8.5 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Tuesday, July 12th. Our guest says in the 60 years since their inception, the ambitious Public Works Project now consists of over 47,000 miles of roads and ramps and bridges. But as the interstates have aged and drivers using them have increased, funding for maintenance hasn't kept up, leading to a backlog of roughly $189 billion for needed improvements. How much do you use interstate highways, and what would you like to see happen when it comes to their maintenance? How do we pay for that? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Rocky Moretti, Director of Policy and Research at the National Transportation Research Group, TRIP, which recently put together a report called The Interstate Highway System Turns 60, Challenges to Its Ability to Continue to Save Lives, Time, and Money. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us. So we'll start at the beginning. 60 years ago, what was the original vision for the interstate system, and how did that come about?
Well, essentially, the first time that the need for a national highway system really was right after World War One, when General Eisenhower at that time led a convoy, military convoy, across the U.S. to see if that would be possible. The first time it was by trucks, and it took 62 days to cross the country. And that was the first sign that that really was going to be far from adequate. And that began a process that took several decades, where there were studies done of the need for a national transportation system or a national highway system. And by 1939, an initial plan with about half of the mileage that's currently out there had been put forward. And then, of course, World War II interrupted any initiative in that direction. But then, very critically, during that war, the value of the Autobahn, really the first national interstate system, became apparent, and General Eisenhower saw how that impacted the war and how it initially helped the Germans and then helped in the invasion of Germany. And really, that stuck in his head, and that coincided with then congressional discussion into the late 40s of a potential plan. And by the early 1950s, most of the routes had been identified. But it wasn't until 1956 that the legislative process actually created a format where construction could begin.
Yeah, so and now from that idea, we have the sprawling web of interstate highways that we have today. 47,000 miles of them?
That's correct. The initial mileage was going to be around 42,000, and then states incrementally have added smaller sections as the years have gone by. And actually, when the interstate system was approved in 1956, there were already some segments, typically toll roads like the Pennsylvania Turnpike, that had already been constructed around 2,000 miles that were then brought into the interstate system, became part of that system.
Yeah. How did the interstate system culturally change us?
It had just a tremendous impact on the ability for individuals to get places. And so suddenly traveling to Florida didn't become this daunting four-day trip through two-lane roads and a patchwork of state roads. It became something that would actually be quite manageable in a couple of days going up and down the East Coast or from the Midwest heading to California became a reasonable trip that could be done in several days. And so, you know, we've sort of lost the glamour of you know, Route 66 once the interstate system came in. But really, it created the era of the, you know, the ability to get places quite quickly under your own, you know, power, getting into a vehicle and getting places. And then very critically, the ability to move freight transformed the nation. And now we see the interstate system 60 years later, carrying more than half of all freight that's moved in the country, it still very much is the economic backbone of the nation.
Yeah, I talk a little bit more about the economic benefits. Why was that so critical to have trucks carrying freight quicker?
Well, if you look at productivity, if you're able to produce goods in the Midwest and get them to either coast within 2 or 3 days, that has a significant impact on your ability to produce in those areas, to have warehouses, to move those goods, and most critically, the cost of those goods started to decrease. If you look at agriculture or energy extraction, obviously critical across the country, but particularly if you look at energy, in certain areas of the country, although we've seen that expand dramatically over the last 20 years because of improvements in energy extraction, all of those economic sectors are tremendously reliant on the ability to move goods. If you look at agriculture, certainly prior to the interstate, rail was and continues to be very critical in the ability to move goods, but the interstate greatly accelerated the ability to move things quickly, and then once they got to a large urban area, to literally take it right to the actual market where you were trying to move goods. And for perishable items, that became very critical. That additional speed of moving goods had a significant impact in terms of reducing those costs. And so the consumer saw lower costs, the producers saw greater access to markets and reduced costs of moving those goods.
Yeah. Then again, the interstate system did shut down some roadside attractions along Route 66.
Certainly, as interstates came in, then the large interchanges, the towns along those routes became where commerce was moving, and so you certainly saw a shift away from two-lane rural road to routes right along the interstate. And that's why you've seen a continued movement. In addition to the interstate, there are also a lot of limited access roads. Limited access, I suppose, is a bit of a transportation term that probably doesn't mean much to the public. But essentially, it's a highway or a road without stop signs, without traffic lights, and so what we have seen is states have recognized that if you don't have four-lane highway access, from a community's perspective, you're unlikely to see much economic development. So that became absolutely the lifeline, and if you look at the matrix of the interstate highway system, not surprisingly, it became the modern equivalent of our rivers in terms of where economic development was attracted.
Yeah, so on the 60th birthday of the interstate system, how do you rate the quality of our interstate highways?
Well, you look at the numbers in terms of how much we're spending, how much we need to spend, and the U.S. Department of Transportation estimates we have around $190 billion backlog in terms of what needs to be done to maintain the system. About half of that is the additional cost of just reconstructing the existing system. The other half are essentially adding additional lanes where they're in urban areas where they're needed, where it's appropriate, improving interchanges, closing off some links in the system. It's accommodating the continued population and economic growth of the country. So they estimate we're spending around 60% of what we currently spend. If you look across the country, what you see is that states, recognizing the importance of the interstates, make it a priority in terms of the smoothness of the pavements, the keeping the bridges open. And states have generally done a pretty good job of keeping the system, at least as you're driving on it, in relatively good condition. The challenge is that many of these portions, particularly in the urban areas, are really in need of more significant long-term reconstruction. Essentially, you can maintain things for so long with relatively moderately cost improvements, but at some point, the actual substructures get to a point where they need to be reconstructed. And with a 60-year-old system, that's the challenge that states across the country are facing.
Well, we'll talk more about that challenge, and we'll welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, Rocky Moretti, who is Director of Policy and Research at the National Transportation Research Group, TRIP. We are talking about TRIP's recently released report, The Interstate Highway System Turns 60, Challenges to Its Ability to Continue to Save Lives, Time, and Money. So how do you rate the quality of the interstate system? Do you drive on the interstates frequently? What do you think needs to happen? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
We are on the road again talking about our interstate highway system, which turned 60 years old this summer. Talking about how the interstate system benefited this country economically. And we are going to talk about the backlog of roughly $190 billion for needed improvements. What shape are our interstate system is our interstate system in 60 years after its inception? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What shape do you think the interstates are in? Do you think, for the most part, the interstate system has been a good thing for the U.S. or not? Why or why not? Do you have any questions on how we fund the interstate system? What improvements are needed for our interstate system? Our guest is Rocky Moretti, Director of Policy and Research at the National Transportation Research Group, TRIP. TRIP recently released the report, The Interstate Highway System Turns 60, Challenges to Its Ability to Continue to Save Lives, Time, and Money. Rocky, we talked quite a bit about saving time and economic benefits. Why do you say the interstate highway system has been saving lives?
When the interstate was built, one of the critical factors was to make it significantly safer than all other roads. And the U.S., in those times, the rates of traffic fatalities was approximately triple what it is today, and today's traffic fatality rate is far too high. We lose approximately 33,000 people per year in vehicle crashes, really a staggering number. And although we've seen a decade of those numbers decreasing, we actually are seeing this year those numbers increasing somewhat. So the interstate highway system, if you think about it, once you get on an interstate system, you're not going to run the risk of, you don't have stop signs, you don't have traffic lights, the shoulders are paved, and then you don't, most critically, as on a two-lane road, have a significant risk of hitting a vehicle coming the other direction. And also what we've seen in the last 20 years is a variety of other improvements, but most critically, those cable barriers that you see in the middle of almost all interstates now have had a significant impact in eliminating those crossover crashes. And so we do an estimate where we look at, if you look at all of the travel, so interstates are approximately 2.5 times safer than the same amount of travel on all other roadways or highways. So we do the math and we look at the amount of travel occurring on the interstate system and said, If they didn't exist, if we were still driving on all those other roads that were out there, we estimate that there'd be an additional 5,400 fatalities per year. So that gives you some sense of the magnitude of the safety improvements that came in with the interstate system.
Are there other safety improvements needed?
Well, there certainly are, and we're seeing, and that extends beyond the interstate system. And the interstate traffic fatality rates are quite good, again, compared to the rest of the system. And so you see some of those improvements now extending off the interstate system, things like rumble strips, good lighting, pavement surfaces that are good traction resistant, or give you a little bit better traction when you're on there. So there are some additional improvements that are done as interstates are built, and a lot of older interstates in terms of some of these features weren't built to the standards that a modern interstate is being built to. And so states, as they're reconstructing older sections of interstates, are adding and improving those safety features as well.
We are talking about our interstate system. Wondering if you have questions about the state of our interstate system, the past, the present, or the future. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Talking with our guest, Rocky Moretti, who is with the Transportation Research Group, TRIP, about TRIP's report, The Interstate Highway System Turns 60, and challenges to its ability to continue to save lives, time, and money. How is the interstate system primarily funded, Rocky?
Well, that was a very critical factor in terms of when the interstate system, you know, like I said, is by the end of World War II, it was pretty much the country recognized the need for this highway system. The real critical thing was essentially, well, how are you going to pay for it? And so a variety of ways were looked at. One was to go ahead and do a bonding program. You know, we'll build it, and then the government will issue bonds. That was found as being very cumbersome. Another option was to toll the entire system, as with the Pennsylvania Turnpike, and that certainly would pay for the system. It's still an option on the table as we look into the future and try and determine how are we actually going to fund the future reconstruction of this system. But ultimately what the Congress decided was to go ahead and use the gas tax. Initially it was 3 cents per gallon. Today it's 18 cents per gallon and 24 for diesel, and that has remained the primary source of funding both for the interstate system and for the entire federal surface transportation system, which also includes transit. But what's happened is that funding source, which hasn't been changed now in over two decades, has not kept up with inflation. Congress, rather than in increasing the user fee, which essentially was the notion that the more people use the system, the more they would pay into it, have increasingly used additional general fund sources to top up the program, to the point now where around a third of the federal program are a variety of general fund mechanisms.
Yes.
And that will be the current five-year program, which was approved last year, now extends to 2020. But there are many voices in Congress saying, let's get back to funding this based on user fees, on the people using the system paying for it, and put it at a level that it could do the work that needs to be done.
Does that mean it means hike the gas tax?
It could be a fuel tax. There are also now some states looking at a way to essentially have motorists pay based on the amount that they're actually driving, some sort of mileage fee where... Because a lot of vehicles now are moving to a variety of energy sources, and so not all of them are contributing to the upkeep of the system that they're driving on.
Yeah, and that's controversial here in Wisconsin anyway. I remember that proposal coming up, and those who purchased Priuses, so they would be, I don't know, more eco-friendly and save on gas, are saying, so now you're gonna penalize me for buying my Prius?
Well, in Oregon, which is the state that's further ahead on this, they've looked at a number of these challenges, you know, equity issues in terms of the type of vehicle that you purchase, looking at issues of privacy, so that while they may, you know, there may be a way to collect the amount of miles you travel, what they don't want to collect is you know, where you've been or where you're actually traveling. And so they have looked at a lot of these issues and really are probably the furthest along with models to address a lot of these issues and challenges. And so to try and balance all these issues, but still at the end of the day, ensure that the public and businesses using the system are paying it equitably.
Yeah. So maybe a mileage fee, maybe increase the gas tax. Any other ways to increase the user fees if that's the way you think we're going?
Well, I think at the federal level, you know, at the state and local level, registration and license fees are also important sources of user fees for transportation. But the federal level has focused most critically, and there's also some cost or fees on large commercial trucks, and so that's also been part of the mix. But again, at this point, you know, Congress recognizes that the solvency of the trust fund, which is the mechanism where these fuel taxes at the federal level are collected and then distributed, is not keeping up with the overall needs. And so I suspect that Congress increasingly is going to be trying to come up with a long-term way, because they recognize it's not just the interstate system, it's the entire system, that we don't have adequate funding to go ahead and make these improvements in the future.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about the trucks, because every time we do a show on the quality of our roads, someone will call in and say, hey, charge trucks more, because they're the ones, the trucks are causing the need for the maintenance and the repair.
Well, and certainly that's why you see a higher fee on diesel fuel, which is obviously aimed at commercial trucks. And we see at the state level, increasingly, trucking organizations will be supportive of increase in user fees, notwithstanding that's going to mean additional cost for the truckers because of the cost of fuel. But what they recognize is obviously their livelihood relies on a well-maintained transportation system. They need good highways and bridges. And so in many cases, we see trucking organizations at the state level being advocates for improving the system, even though that means they're going to have to pay more for it. But what they recognize is that they're going to pay more if the system is crumbling.
So we're looking at a nearly $190 billion backlog for repairs and maintenance. And you say the interstate funding hasn't really changed all that much in 20 years. What accounts for that? Why are we so far behind?
Because the system relies on Congress to step forward and increase those fees instead of based on the actual needs of the system. What we've seen over the last two decades is a reluctance to increase those fees. There's been more of an acceptance of trying to shift money from other accounts into the transportation system. So the needs are recognized, but politically there's a reluctance to go ahead and tie the user fees to the actual cost of maintaining and constructing the system.
Tim, who was driving this morning, called in but couldn't stay with us, but wanted to ask why, in his mind anyway, federal funding is used for studies and billboards but not actually fixing the roads.
Well, you know, a very small component of the federal transportation program is for research, looking at better materials, looking at ways, you know, which types of improvements are the most effective. And when you actually look at those, those are quite small costs. The vast majority of the money coming into the system either goes to either state transportation departments or large regional governments. And then they get to select how that money's being spent. Typically, it's about 4-1 in terms of the amount of money that goes for highways, roads, and bridges. And then the other portion goes for public transit, which is also typically regional governments have the most critical role in distributing that money.
Let's go to Eric in Madison. Hi, Eric.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
You know, good morning.
You made the comment about increasing revenues on for trucks. Why, God, we pay $2,500 now for a license plate, $500 for heavy use tax every year. Fuel is outrageous. The rates are the same. Roads are atrocious. And you want to increase the fees to run down the road. You about got us driven out of business now. Now you want to talking about increasing fees. You bumped your head, dude.
Oh, I don't know. And Rocky, you can defend yourself. I think I said that this comes up every show we do. Here we go again. Are you asking for trucks to pay more?
Yeah, I had not suggested that the share paid by trucking. In fact, as I pointed out, there are significant charges on heavy trucks, and that's a recognition. So there's studies done on the impact of large trucks versus passenger vehicles, and as you would suspect, large trucks put greater stress on that system. So at the state and national level, the additional fees on large trucks are to make sure that they're paying their fair share. And so when I talk about the need for additional revenue, it's pointing out that at the federal level, the user fees now are paying approximately two-thirds of the current national level of investment. And the rest of it is a variety of general sources, which, of course, all of those additional sources also come through some form of collecting money from the public. So it's just, I think, a recognition by Congress that the transportation system ideally should be paid for the people using the system. And so the public's certainly going to be paying for that system one way or another in terms of their national and state fees. And as we've pointed out in a variety of other reports, there are also significant costs when that system is allowed to crumble. Most critically, when the system deteriorates, we start to see a lot more congestion at the urban level, and there are significant costs associated with that in terms of losing time. We also see that businesses are less efficient, and so you see that their cost increase. And then as Tripp has also documented, the worse shape the roads are in, the less efficient your vehicles are operating, and so your vehicles are getting beat up, and you're paying a lot more to maintain those vehicles, over $100 billion a year nationally. So there are significant costs when you don't maintain that system. And we also see across the country, in addition to the interstate system, which is 47,000 miles, there's an additional approximately over 100,000 miles of roads called the National Highway System that are eligible for additional federal funding. And that's a recognition that beyond the interstate system, there's another series of highways that are absolutely critical to the functioning of our economy, to the functioning of our communities. And so we see additional resources being made available for those funds. And that really then becomes, so what becomes of the interstate system? What will that system look like 20 or 30 years from now? And that's certainly a discussion that is happening nationally moving forward.
We just heard from now a trucker saying, hey, I'm taxed enough or I pay enough. You're going to push me out of business. In a political climate where increasing the gas tax or mileage fees or anything else is generally frowned upon, what is it going to take to boost funding for the interstate system?
Well, I think partly are these types of discussions. Is that I think if utilities are a good analogy. I think we all recognize that when we pay our utility bills, that's the cost of the lights going on in the morning, of having the energy that we need to run our businesses, to run our homes, and so those rates are set to reflect that. The problem we have in transportation is that we don't have a rate structure that can necessarily be based on what's needed, that when we get up in the morning, our transportation system, from our highways to our public transit system, are well maintained and provide adequate mobility. And when we don't have that, we start to pay the cost of not having the system that we need.
We're going to check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking about the state of our interstate system and what it's going to take to better maintain it. Are you in favor of increasing the gas tax or fees or other user fees to help maintain our interstate system? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Maybe we'll talk about toll roads when we come back. Is that part of the answer? And we'll also zero in on the state of Wisconsin and find out what shape the interstate pavement is here in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are taking a ride on our interstate system on the 60th birthday of our interstate system. It's been 60 years since This ambitious public works project began, and now it consists of more than 47,000 miles of roads and ramps and bridges. But as the interstates have aged and drivers using them have increased, our guest says funding for maintenance has not kept up, leading to a backlog of nearly $190 billion for needed improvements. What do we do to fix the interstates? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What do you think about using or raising user fees like the gas tax or a mileage tax? What about a toll road? Our guest is Rocky Moretti. He is Director of Policy and Research at the National Transportation Research Group, TRIP. TRIP recently released the report, The Interstate Highway System Turns 60, Challenges to Its Ability to Continue to Save Lives, Time, and Money. So, Rocky, is TRIP calling for specific proposals to improve the interstate system?
Our organization doesn't take positions on legislation or referendums, so we're not going to come out and say what needs to be done in terms of any particular user fee options or increases. But I think we help inform the debate, certainly, and we certainly advocate for a well-maintained, safe, and efficient transportation system. But the way I would couch this discussion is, at what level should we be investing in our transportation system? It's not unlike your own home. I mean, nobody wants to put a new roof on the house, but we all recognize if you don't make that investment when it's needed, there are going to be consequences. That's certainly true in Wisconsin, where we estimate that the annual cost of a deficient transportation system is $6 billion a year.
How do you figure that?
There's three components to that. One is additional vehicle operating costs. We estimate that motorists spend an additional $3.2 billion maintaining their vehicle because their cars are getting beaten up on those rough roads, and that may essentially means vehicles don't last as long as they should, and so there's an economic consequence. The cost of traffic congestion in terms of time lost and additional fuel wasted is $1.7 billion. And then we estimate another $1 billion a year are the cost of serious and fatal traffic crashes. We estimate in approximately a third of traffic crashes, the lack of adequate roadway safety contributed to those crashes. It didn't cause them, but it was part of the reason the consequences were so serious. So when you don't make adequate investment, there are real costs. And so the discussion really is, at what level and through what mechanism do we want to invest in our system?
Yeah. Well, through your research, what do you think of the possibility of more toll roads to pay for this system?
Well, certainly tollways are one way and appropriate in many cases, because then the people using the system clearly are the ones paying for it. And so that certainly within the federal program, there has been increased discussion of states being given that option if they choose that. And they've allowed at the federal level a pilot project where a few states can look at that, and that is certainly in discussion in future federal programs, or Congress could change those rules at any point to allow states to do that. Now, you look in Wisconsin, for example, where significant activity has occurred or is occurring to improve and reconstruct the Southeast Wisconsin Freeway, and also other portions of the interstate system are being looked at or are currently under reconstruction. But the state is staggering under these costs, and they recognize with a 60-year-old interstate system, more of these reconstruction projects are needed, but it would literally swamp the state's transportation budget if they took on all of those projects. And so, as you heard from a previous caller, the public certainly needs to be convinced in terms of what level of investment is needed and the best mechanism to pay for it, and in some cases, they may choose tolling to pay for it. It's certainly one of the options.
It's interesting that we almost all of our callers, and we decided we didn't want to focus in on it, wanted to talk about whether truckers pay enough or not. I don't know why that comes up every single conversation, but we had the one trucker saying he pays enough, and somebody else called in to say he should raise his rates. Somebody else who called in who said truckers are important, leave us alone. What do you make of that?
Well, if you look on Wisconsin's interstate system, where 14% of all travel are large commercial trucks, obviously the public sees their economy literally out there moving on the highways. The public has safety concerns, although when the issue is studied, typically what is found is that large commercial trucks are driven quite well in terms of the performance of the drivers, and typically most large truck crashes fall on the actual driver of the passenger vehicle in terms of causation. But that's not really but the reality of the physics on the ground, obviously, are any time a passenger vehicle in a large truck crash, the consequences are more likely to impact the passenger vehicle. So you have a lot of those concerns, but again, trucking is absolutely vital to the economy, so it really becomes an issue of equity in terms of large trucks do pay additional fees, and making sure that those fees are set right so that they're paying their fair share.
Yeah. Kay emails, we live on Highway 14 in southwest Wisconsin, nowhere near an interstate. We hardly ever even cross one, much less use any of them. I would strongly object to a solution to interstate funding that included a gas tax unless a good portion was also to be applied to state highways. Highway 14 feels like we're driving over railroad ties in many places where we live, and between where they live and Madison, and needs much more attention than any interstate I've ever seen. Toll roads could be an additional funding method that would at least raise some funds from those who are using the interstates. So she's saying, hey, I don't use the interstates hardly at all. Don't raise my gas tax.
Well,
unless it goes to my Highway 14.
Well, and that was my question. I mean, I think her implication was if there was a toll on an interstate system and it was paying for the interstate reconstruction, that may be, for her perspective, appropriate. But she obviously wants her roads in her community upgraded, and state and there's really three layers. You have the interstate system, you have state highways maintained by the state transportation departments, and then also local roads maintained by local governments, and people obviously want to be sure that what they're contributing in their communities they're getting their share of those improvements. And state governments certainly work hard to make sure that the funding between the large urban areas and the smaller communities in the rural areas, everybody gets their share. And a state system allows you to go ahead and make sure that you're making improvements across the entire system. But it also points out to the need of in addition to the interstate system, making sure that your entire roadway system is maintained in good condition, and that becomes a huge challenge to all levels of government.
Yeah, your report did look at the quality of the interstate pavement in each state, and in Wisconsin, you find that 21% of interstate pavement is either poor or mediocre, making us one of the worst states in this category. So, what's the deal with that?
Well, and you see a lot of reconstruction needs either being addressed or being identified in the state, and those are looking at surface conditions. What state which are very critical to the public, but the state transportation departments then are also looking at the surfaces underlying those highways and recognizing that in many cases simple resurfacing is no longer going to be adequate, and so. So that's a challenge in Wisconsin and really across the country, and that's where you see those big backlog numbers that you mentioned earlier in the call, is this system is so critical to our economy and just the daily lifestyles of the public. How do we make sure over the next 20, 30 years we can fund the improvements that are necessary? And then additionally, where it's appropriate, where do we want to look at expanding the system or in some cases taking highways and improving them so that they're up to interstate standards, both for safety and also their ability to move the public and goods. So you get at that issue of where do we go in the future.
So where do we go in the future? Where do we want to expand the interstate?
Well, I think to a large extent, states are incrementally. Look, there are some like I-69, which is essentially considered the NAFTA corridor through the central part of the country. In bits and pieces, sections have been built. But then you also see a lot of sections of interstates across the country that are four lane, but they're carrying such significant volumes of traffic that states or regions would like to increase a lot of those sections to three lanes in each direction, again, where the volume warrants it. And so and the overall mechanism of the federal government distributing that money at the state level for those major pieces of infrastructure continues to serve us well. It's just the funding mechanism has not kept up. And so we've seen a lot of general fund sources in there, but I think ideally connecting it more directly to the users would be, I think, preferable to the public and just for the accountability of the system.
We have just a minute to go, and Dan on Facebook wants to know about building an infrastructure for a self-driving car future. Is that going to be make the interstate system different?
Well, it certainly is. You know, we're hearing a lot about it. The reality is the technology to the point where it's truly autonomous, or we have driverless vehicles, is still probably a ways away. But if you look at large-scale trucking, the movement of the public, it's likely to lead to even increased demands for mobility. So we're going to be seeing, you know, an increased use of the system in the future. And that's going to mean we're going to need to be maintaining that system, keeping it in good shape.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Rocky Moretti is Director of Policy and Research at the National Transportation Research Group, TRIP. Thanks to producers Chris Molina, Nyasia Ellison, and Brianne Shasso. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.